Let's go O's. 105.7 The Fan and the Baltimore Orioles present the Hot Stove Show.
Play ball!
This is the Hot Stove Show on Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan. Brought to you by Cortland Hearth and Hardware. Warm up winter with hot buys. Get yours now at CortlandHearth.com. Now, live from Orioles Spring Training in Florida, here's Jim Hunter on the flagship station of the Baltimore Orioles, 105.7 The Fan.
Well, how about that? I'm in Florida, apparently. Somebody forgot to check the lead-in. Oh, well, we're back at it. Tim, can I have a little more of me, by the way? Jim Hunter, and that's a little bit too much. Jim Hunter and Rock Kabako. See, the first show, you got to get all the levels straight. But I knew it was time to get back to work when you, Rock, were getting in a Twitter argument yesterday over who were the starting pitchers the last time the Orioles played the Norfolk Tides in Norfolk. So I knew, hey, we got to get back on there and get some new material.
Thank goodness for Google, because I did see that Yoon actually had started that game, went four innings, and he opposed Zach Davies. And somebody was saying, no, it was Tyler Wilson against Davies. But you check, do a Google check, and you ended up going four innings in that game.
Well, it was our off-season debut, but it is not an off-season for the executives. The Orioles Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations, Dan Duquette, nice enough to join us here at Dempsey's Brew Pub. If you are in the area, come on down and join us. So I was told that you were going to give us all your secrets. You were going to break some news tonight, and by the time this show is over, we're going to know exactly how next year's roster is going to look. Is that right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I mean, it's a good time to start the off-season chatter anyway,
right,
for the Hot Stove League. We've been talking to a number of teams, and I see there's clubs signing players now and teams moving around via the trade market, so the Hot Stove season is off. And, you know, the Orioles... Yeah, I can tell you what we're going to do. We're going to have another good team next year, like we do every year. And what I like about this coming season is we have a lot of our pitching staff coming back. So we have a little bit more depth to our pitching staff and a little bit more certainty and quality on the staff going into the season. So that's something that we haven't had here. And we've been trying to build it and add and sign pitchers, but I think we do have a little bit more depth this year with some of the young guys that emerged, like Bundy and Kevin Gausman. And then we have some veterans. We were able to pick up Miley at the trade deadline, a left-hander that we needed dearly after Chen signed last year. So we got them, and Tillman's been a real stable force for us over a couple of years. So I like the pitching going into the season, and that's always a good place to start.
All right, now along those lines, Matt Wieters is a free agent. You still can bring him back. He turned down the qualifying offer. The catcher's position on a staff like this, and I do agree, I mean, the Orioles starters in September had the best ERA in all of Major League Baseball, so the hope would be that they carry that into next season. But the catching spot, I know you still have Caleb. I know you still have Francisco Pena. I know you like Audrey Perez a lot. But what about a full-time or maybe a platoon catcher coming in if Wieters does not come back?
Well, that's something that we're going to take a look at. That's on our shopping list. And we do like the depth that we have throughout the organization. And don't forget we have Chance Sisko, that's a .322 lifetime hitter and right, 400 on base capability, who did pretty well at AA and went to AAA at the end of the year and showed some power in the opposite field. So we have all them in the organization, and we can look for a bridge catcher, if you will. But I like a lot of the people that we have in-house, and I like the fact that we have a couple right-hand hitting catchers in Joseph and Pena. Mm-hmm. Audrey Perez has been a good organization catcher, and he's done a nice job with the pitchers. And last year he made the AAA All-Star team and hit the ball with some power. Showed more power than he had at any time in his career other than his first year in the New York Penn League. And then we have Austin Wins, had a nice showing this past couple of weeks in the Arizona
right,
Fall League. He's a good organization catcher at AA. And then, you know, the wild card is Sisko. He's a left-hand hitting catcher. He's a good athlete. And, you know, a left-handed bat at his age, he's highly rated by the other organizations and the national publications.
Has Sisko progressed enough defensively that you think he would be a viable candidate to break camp with the team, or does he still maybe need a little more work? I know he's improved.
Well, I think he's a work in progress, his defense. He handles the pitchers pretty well. And, you know, what we're finding from the metrics is that, you know, your left hand is as important as your right hand, or probably more important as you receive the ball and frame the pitches. So Cisco has good leadership ability. He's got quick feet. He's got a pretty good arm, although he's going to need to improve his release time. But his on-base capability, his ability to hit, those are all pluses that he has going into the season. And Caleb Joseph, he didn't have a very good year last year. I mean, let's face it. He's always had a good year with the bat, but last year, you know, he for whatever reason, he didn't produce like he has in the past. He's going to need to show that he can swing the bat like he has. And Pena's has some value, particularly against left-handed pitching. Mm-hmm. He's strong, and he controlled the running game with his arm. So I do like the depth that we have in the organization. I would like to see us sign a veteran catcher, and you know we're currently working on that.
Now, when you see the report that the Yankees traded Brian McCann to the Astros for two minor league pitching prospects, do you look at how that impacts the Orioles, not because you were in on McCann, but because the Astros are now no longer in the market for a catcher, and they were thought of to be a suitor for Wieters and Jason Castro, who you may have some interest in? Do you kind of look at how that impacts what business you're trying to do?
Well, there's a number of teams looking for catching, and there's some catchers that are available on the trade market in addition to the free agent market. You know, it's actually quite a few teams looking for catching, so it'll be interesting to see how that catching market shakes out. Matt Wieters did a nice job for us for a number of years, but we didn't think that it was prudent to make the qualifying offer. I mean, $17.2 million is a lot of money, okay? And the top, 10% of the players get that kind of money, and That's a lot of money to invest into a player, and we can use that money elsewhere to staff our team. And the fact that we have catching depth is good. You know, that does give us some foundation going into the season.
Now, Mark Trumbo, you did extend the qualifying offer to, and obviously you want to bring him back. How quickly would his market move along when you got guys like Cespedes out there that's going to hold out for the big contract? And then Josh Reddick just agreed with the Astros 4 years in excess of $50
million. 52, they're saying.
So you're starting to see you have the Cespedes looking for $100 million, and now you have Reddick who's coming off a tough year, especially when he was traded to the Dodgers, now in the $52 million range.
Well, Mark Trumbo had a terrific year for us. He got off to a great start. Hit more home runs than anybody else. He had 48 on the year. And then he was recognized by his peers as the comeback player of the year. I asked him, I said, Mark, what did you come back from? He said, well, I guess I came back from a not such a good year. And then, you know, the icing on the cake was when he got named the Silver Slugger for one of the top hitters in the outfield in the American League. So good for him. He had a great year. Really industrious kid. Made the All-Star team. Got a big hit for us in that playoff game with Toronto. So, obviously, we like Mark. He had the best year of his career with us, and I think his market will develop here pretty quickly. Although, you never know, he has that qualifying offer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the event that we don't sign him and he signed with somebody else, we get a draft pick, which is good. We can add to our players in the minor leagues. And last year, around that time of the draft, we picked up Cody Sedlock, a right-handed mm-hmm. pitcher, who was a Big Ten Pitcher of the Year and should have a bright future as a pitcher. But, you know, at that point in the draft, you know, provided that the rules don't change in the negotiations between the players and the owners, we should be able to get a good player. It's not like if we don't sign Mark Trumbo, we're going away with nothing.
Right.
Because we made the qualifying offer, he turned it down. We'll be eligible for a draft pick.
Now, watching Mark play every day, I thought he was better defensively than people are giving him credit for. But I do also understand that there are better defensive players that could play right field on a regular basis. If you bring him back, and obviously he has said he told Rock he really would like to come back, does he get the majority of his at-bats as the main DH? And does that have a domino effect where Pedro Alvarez maybe moves on? Trumbo could give Chris Davis a day off at first base, and then you go after an everyday right fielder or maybe a platoon in right field with the focus on the defense.
Well, that, you know, that's a good question. First of all, I really shouldn't talk about where he fits in on the team because he's a free agent. But you know, I can tell you that.
So I just pushed his cost up.
You know, he had a great year, obviously, and you know, he led the league in home runs, and we like what he did. We do have a capable replacement in Trey Mancini. Mm-hmm. We also have Christian Walker, who's on the cusp of becoming a – oh, you like Trey Mancini? Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, this guy can hit. Here's another guy that's a 320 lifetime hitter, won the Eastern League batting title, yeah. And he uses all fields. And we saw his power when he came up in September. He had three home runs. He rakes against left-handed pitching. But he can also play a position. He can play first. And he can hit right and left-handed pitching. He's got the kind of swing that where he uses the whole field. So he's a very, very capable player. And it looked to me like he was ready to step in and help us in the big league.
So you would be okay, I assume, then, with carrying Mancini next season, even if there wasn't a full-time position. Let's say he was in a platoon-type situation, maybe a DH or just a bench guy, a big bat coming off the bench. Would you be okay doing that, or do you feel like that might stunt his development? He needs to play every day at AAA if you don't have an everyday spot for him in the majors.
Well, if he was younger and he signed out of high school, I might adopt that position that he needs additional time in the minors. But you saw Manny come up from AA, right, and went to the big leagues, and he hit better in the big leagues. This kid hit over, what, 330 at AA, mm-hmm. went to AAA, hit 290. It's a tough ballpark to mm-hmm. hit in Norfolk. And, you know, he went to Notre Dame for 3 years. He's got his degree. You know, he's 24 years old. Looked to me like he was ready to play in the big leagues. And, you know, we need, right now, currently, we need a right fielder. We need a DH. And depending on whether Kim can play every day in left field, we may need a platoon partner for him. So there's three spots where a right-handed hitter, or let's say Trey Mancini, could conceivably get some at-bats. The DH, I don't know if he can play the outfield. he played in the summer college league. You know, I don't know if he can do it here, but, you know, he can hit. It's in the book.
Now, I know you're not going to address specific free agents, but, you know, Dexter Fowler is out there again. And the only reason I bring this up is because I don't know if you remember, but that was kind of a controversy last spring with Dexter. Could you see a situation, considering the fallout from what happened there with Casey Close's Twitter tantrum, that you could sit down with Casey and discuss whether it's him or another client? I mean, is that kind of where you look at it, okay, no bridges are burned, and you could go ahead and still do business with a guy like that?
That's two alliterations. Casey Close's Twitter tantrum.
I've been rehearsing.
Very good, Rock.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, I get the big bucks.
First broadcast of the season. You're already in mid-season form, Rock. Anyway, Casey Close, I saw Casey Close out in Arizona at the GM meeting last week. And, you know, you got to hand it to him. I think he made the right call for his client. Mm-hmm. Because Casey last year had a couple of free agent players. He had the big outfielder the Cubs signed. The defensive guy that was with the Cardinals.
Jason Hayward.
Yeah, Jason Hayward. And then he had Alex Gordon. They were both free agents. He got a lot of money for them last year. And I think a lot of the money was spent on those two players. And the market was a little soft on his client there. And on Fowler, anyway, or at least Casey thought it was soft. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he went back in to the free agent market. The kid had a good year. He has another qualifying offer with him. So it'd be interesting to see how the market goes. But, you know, Fowler had a good year, and I think Casey felt that he made the right call for his client by taking the one-year deal, going back to the Cubs. He had a good year with them and got to play center field, and now he's back out on the market. So I didn't answer your question about whether
I paused.
Did you break bread with Casey Close? I think that's what Rock wants to know.
About whether we were going to sign him. Well, I have to tell you, I tried to sign Casey Close out of the University of Michigan when he was down mm-hmm. the Cape Cod League as a junior he was in between seasons, and he was undrafted, and I was down there scouting for the Milwaukee Brewers. And I got to know Casey. He's from a good family, and he's a bright guy, very competitive. I don't understand why he did last year, say some of the things that he said, but, business is business, and, it's time to move on.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dan Duquette with us. We'll take a break. Our off-season debut of Hot Stove Baseball, we're at Dempsey's Brew Pub. You know, we're going to take next week off. We're working so hard tonight for the first show. We're going to take next week off. And then beginning December 1st up till Christmas, Buck Showalter will be our guest right here at Dempsey's on December 1st. Dan Duquette here tonight. We'll take a break. More to come on 105.7 The Fan.
Now, back to the Hot Stove Show on 105.7 The Fan. An hour-long look at baseball and the off-season trades and deals. Once again, live from Dempsey's Pub at Oriole Park. Here's Jim Hunter on The Fan.
And we remind you to mark your calendars. Saturday, January 28th, it'll be the return of Orioles Fan Fest presented by Visit Sarasota County. The baseball season begins at the Baltimore Convention Center. It's a day-long celebration of all things Birdland, and you can have your picture taken with Brock Cabaco. Enjoy interactive Q&A sessions with your favorite players, coaches, and team executives, including Dan Duquette, memorabilia sales, clinics, games, clubhouse tours, and much more. For all the details, Saturday, January 28th, that is the Orioles Fan Fest. Get online, orioles.com/fanfest. Visiting with Dan Duquette on our debut show, and Rock is looking at the MVP. Who's the MVP?
It is Mike Trout is the MVP.
Did you turn your mic off?
I don't know. Did I get cut off here?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, something happened. So Mike Trout is the MVP. Machado is fifth, and Britton 11th, according to our colleague Steve Molesky. How about that?
Or my Twitter account.
All right. Visiting with Dan Duquette. Dan, I want to ask you about some of the minor league players that, to me, really took a step forward last year. And we saw, like, with Benintendi coming up young with Boston, Arruda's, the pitcher with the Dodgers, came up at 19. Before I ask you about a couple of players, what is your philosophy about age, and is it too soon to bring a player up?
Well, I don't think it's an age issue. I think it's a skill issue. And, this is a young man's game. If you have the skills like Manny had when he came up when he was young, you'll get the opportunity right away. And, Dylan Bundy came up when he was young. Scope came up when he was young. But Manny is probably the most gifted of all those players, and he was able to show his skills. I mean, the guy's a natural. he played a role in our resurgence and trekked back to the playoffs in 2012 when he came up. He really solidified the team, and he's become the best player on the team, and he's still young. He's mm-hmm. still a young ball player. So I remember reading about when Paul Richards took over the Orioles, he brought in a youth movement, right? If you bring in youth and they have some ability, it gives you hope for the future, but
right.
you can also build your roster for a little bit longer term. So I'm always in favor of giving young players the opportunity. It's all about their talent level. And when you have players like Manny, you don't have to worry about what's going to happen or if they're going to be scarred, because they can play. And, mm-hmm. They'll show their talent right away.
All right, one player I want to ask you about is Cedric Mullins. And I realize he was only at Delmarva this year, but he had a real solid year. 30 stolen bases. He's a switch hitter, has a ton of speed, and I'm told is a very good defensive player. Is it unreasonable to think that a player could go from Delmarva to make an impact next year at the big club? A player like that who really is coming on, he's only been in the organization 2 years.
Yeah, he's been in the organization 2 years. I mean, he has a lot of the skills that we're looking for. He's a very athletic outfielder. He's got the extra base power. I think he had 10 triples and over 50 extra base hits. And he's got good speed. He stole some bases. So he's got all the skills that we're looking for. Personally, I like to see the players play Double A. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of players that didn't get the foundation of Double A or enough of a foundation at Double A to pay the price by not developing and not playing effectively in the big leagues the way they should. So I'm a big advocate of the players stopping along the way at Double A, unless they're so gifted that they can blow right by there, like I mean, once in a while, a player like Al Kaline, for example,
right.
will go from Johnny's over here and end up in the big leagues. But that's a pretty rare talent.
All right, another player is a pitcher who was also on Delmarva this year, Christian Alvarado, just 22, but he's got 5 years now in the system. And what jumped out at me in the 27 starts at Delmarva, 3.41 ERA, but he had 148 strikeouts and 148 innings, walked only 29. So when I see that, I see a strike thrower who challenges hitters.
Well, he can throw strikes, and pitching is about throwing strikes. You know, he shows natural ability to throw a couple of pitches consistently over the plate, and he's had a lot of success there. He's certainly a young Venezuelan, to keep your eye on.
Are you able to give us a sort of an update on the pitching coach and bullpen coach searches?
We're still working on that. talking about the pitching coach search. So we had interviews. We had some good candidates. We talked to Roger McDowell. We talked to Alan Mills, our double-A pitching coach. We talked to Frank Viola, his triple-A pitching coach with the Mets, and then two minor league coordinators. We interviewed Tim Levesque with the Cardinals, who's done a really nice job in their system developing pitchers, and Danny Clark with the Rangers, who's the minor league coordinator there as well. So, we're currently in deliberations, and we're going to try to get that resolved if we can this week, and start moving on Bucks coaching staff.
Now, would you go pitching coach first, and then work toward the bullpen coach? Is it conceivable you could have both announcements? Both hires the same
Well, we're trying to get the pitching coach resolved first, and then we can move on to the other parts of the coaching staff. But that's obviously the key to the coaching staff is getting the pitching coach organized. So we're going to get that done, and then we'll work on the others.
I believe the latest deadline tomorrow is setting the 40-man roster before the Rule 5 draft, guys that have to be protected. How far along are you making that decision? Can you give us kind of a ballpark figure of how many guys? I'm predicting
hey, who you
at
least
Dan? Three. But yes, I've done heavy speculation.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
Mike Yastrzemski's listening.
Actually, his agent called me yesterday. Jack Toffey wanted to know about Yaz. So, incidentally, Yaz had a couple of injuries where he had surgeries. He had a labrum problem, and he also had a core injury that he had to have surgery for. So he's got a little work to do to be ready for the spring. We already brought up Mancini, who was added to the roster from Double-A. So he's already on the roster, and he came up and he made an impact on the club during the season. Then we also added Donnie Hart during the season, who did a nice job out of the bullpen. We kept looking around for another left-handed pitcher, and we found that we had one right in Double-A, so he came up and he helped the team. A lot like Givens came up from Double-A a year ago and helped the ball club. So that's all good. But I expect we'll be adding a few more players tomorrow. We've got some pitching depth in the organization that I believe we need to protect. And we'll take a look at them. And as I said, we have some catching depth on the roster. Chance Cisco does not need to be protected. He was signed out of high school, so he's got an extra year. So we don't need to worry about putting him on the roster right now. But that deadline is tomorrow, 8 o'clock. Hopefully we'll have some of that done between now and tomorrow at 5.
Now, you've spoken of the depth in the starters, and right now you have 6 for 5 spots. They were all on the team in September. As you look at the just-concluded postseason, and I realize in short series with built-in days off for television, you could utilize relievers a little bit more often. But your bullpen, again, was outstanding this year. 32 wins by relievers. Brad Brock had 10 wins, second most wins on the staff in a relief role. In fact, it was the most by reliever since Arthur Rhodes in 97. The bullpen, obviously, I got to believe there's some guys out there in demand. How tempting is it for you to see the value, to see what you might get back for any of those relievers? Or is it the opposite? Are you looking to even get the bullpen stronger and solidify what is already a strength?
Well, we have a real solid bullpen. That's been one of the staples of the team the last couple of years when we've been very competitive. That's something that Buck does really well. He manages it very precisely, gets the most out of the players. And we saw Zach Britton develop and be the best pitcher in the league this year by perfecting his sinker. So that's going to remain a strength for the team. I hope that we can add a couple from our minor league system, like we added Hart this year, like we added Gibbons last year, to come up and bolster that bullpen and give us a little bit more depth. And I hope that we can do that for next season. And, you know, Britton we have for a couple more years. I really like what he did for us. And you saw the value of the relievers in the postseason, the way that Terry Francona and Joe Maddon used their closers. They were both acquired at trades during the season. Miller, of course, was traded by the Yankees to the Indians, and they gave up a lot of their farm system to get him. And then Chapman, the same, to the Cubs. So I'd rather see Zach Britton on our team than I would to trade him right now.
Now, the GM meetings have come and gone. The winter meetings, usually where there's a lot of activity and trades, comes up in early December. Are you surprised at some of the early activity already with players changing teams and some trades? Is this a sign that clubs are focusing in on specific players and there's a fear they may lose them, so they're being proactive?
Well, clubs are being aggressive in the market. You know, the basic agreement needs to be resolved here in the next couple of weeks. And I think clubs will have a little bit firmer direction once that's done. But this free agency market, there's not a lot of players in the market. There's not a lot of pitching in the market for sure. So I think clubs have assessed their need, and you know, the players have figured out where they want to go. So I think this market's going to move pretty quickly. Although there are, you know, 8 to 10 players that have that qualifying offer, that's going to slow down their market some, because that may change depending on the deal the owners make with the players.
Hopefully this wasn't already asked. I've been multitasking, but
yeah. What are you doing down there?
Could you see reopening extension talks with some of the guys here? I know you've got other business to deal with, but Chris Tillman will be entering his free agent year. Manny Machado after 2018. You guys were talking about Britton. I mean, could you see yourself sitting down and discussing that topic?
Well, that's always a possibility. We usually address that during the course of the negotiation, and some of these players, that'll come up during their arbitration contracts negotiation. And then, you know, we got a couple other young pitchers, Gibbons, Bundy, Gosman. You know, you could add them to that list for speculation, too, if you
right.
want. So, I mean, those are some good guys for us, and we can always address that as we go through the process.
Is it fair to assume that the payroll will be going up again simply because you have so many guys do raises again in arbitration, and some guys again significant bumps?
Well, I mean, that's really up to the ownership to set the payroll, but we've increased the payroll every year that I've been here because the fans have come out and they've been so great to support the Orioles. They continue to do that. They watch us on TV on Masson, and they come out to the ballpark. They supported us almost $2.2 million last year, and that's why we can increase the payroll, because the fans are coming out and they like the team. And you know, they like that we've been competitive and been in the playoffs for 3 of the last 5 years. So to the extent that they keep coming out and supporting us, you know, we're going to put as much of that resource we can towards the major league payroll and having a good team every year.
All right, finally, we know you have to move on. Should we expect a slow start to this as you move forward? I know you told Rock you're working on the pitching coach and the bullpen coach. Thanksgiving is next week, and then the winter meetings will be in D.C. this year. No resort, right. So right down the road.
Right.
You just drive back and forth if you want. Do you think more for your club will happen there, or might it happen prior to getting there?
Well, you know, the fans that have followed the club closely know that we build the roster year-round, right?
Mm-hmm.
So – and we don't try to win the division in December and November, but we try to make good decisions so that we have our team staffed appropriately and we have good players. So nobody ever picks us to do well. All right, whatever criteria they use, I'm not sure what they use, but they never pick us to do well. And some of that has to do with we're very methodical in regards, and we're critical of who we bring on to the team, and there's a good reason for that. We want the right fit. We want the job to match the player and the player to match the job. We want the player to fit into the clubhouse and to play good defense, obviously. So I can't tell you that this is going to be a big splashy offseason. We spent a lot of money last year. We staffed our team. We made the playoffs again, and a lot of those guys are coming back. We are going to, you know, fill the holes and get a little bit more athletic in the outfield, look for some catching depth. you know, try to get better on base capability. You know, those are all things that we're going to be looking to improve in the offseason.
Well, Dan, we really appreciate you coming down tonight for our debut offseason show. I'm sure we'll have you back on several times. And best of luck as this chess game now commences with you and your other 29 colleagues trying to get the better players. So going into spring training, there's optimism that it'll be another good year for the Birds.
Yeah, we're going to have another good year. You got Machado coming back. You got Hardy. You got Scope. You got Davis. So your infield is solid. You got Jones in the outfield. We're going to have to fill in at DH, outfield, and catching. But I'm confident we can do that. You got the great bullpen coming back. And, of course, you got a great manager in Buck Showalter. So we got a lot of good pieces here to have another competitive team.
All right, Dan, we appreciate the visit, and we'll keep track of,
all right.
of what's
Thank
going
you.
On. That's Dan Duquette, everybody, joining us on our debut show at Hot Snow Baseball. We're at Dempsey's Brew Pub at Camden Yards. We're coming back. Another segment here on 105.7 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Hot Stove Show. An hour-long look at baseball and the offseason with Jim Hunter on the flagship station of the Orioles. 105.7 The Fan.
Jim and Rock, we are back at Dempsey's Brew Pub at the ballpark, our off-season debut of Hot Stove Baseball, and we remind you to reserve your spot now at Oriole Park. It is the upcoming 25th anniversary season here at Camden Yards. By placing your deposit today on a full or partial season plan, now, season plan members, as you know, enjoy dramatic savings over the cost of single-game tickets, plus a full lineup of exclusive orange carpet benefits, including baseball's most flexible exchange policy, and access to Orioles opening day. So get on board now for 2017. Maybe make it a Christmas present. Orioles.com/deposits or 888-848-BIRD. We want to thank Dan Duquette for coming by on our debut show. Rock, what'd you make of Dan's comments? And you know, the one thing that I know fans get frustrated, but he made a good point. If he goes too positive on a free agent, it costs him like $10 million more.
Right.
Because the agents take that and go, well, you were on the radio and you said this. So I understand why executives do that. But it seems to me that they, even though he said they're methodical, he has very specific areas that he's trying to target. And behind the scenes, anyway, they're being aggressive trying to meet those needs.
Right. It's hard to answer. Like I had somebody ask me on Twitter, how aggressive were they going after Reddick, who ended up
with the Astros tonight?
The Astros.
Yeah.
We have no way of knowing that. I'm sure they've liked him for years. I'm sure he was discussed at the GM meetings. I have no doubt. But, you know, that was a pretty quick signing. Maybe they weren't anticipating that. They probably thought they were going to be able to resume talks at the winter meetings. And Dan did point out when he first came in here, said, man, the Astros have been busy tonight. And mentioned they've been aggressive with getting McCann and Reddick. But obviously they had interest, but Dan's not going to broadcast how much. And I think he told me they talked over like 20 teams at GM meetings. So, I mean, obviously, you know, you try and lay the groundwork for the winter meetings. If you get something done sooner, great. But a lot of times it doesn't happen until then and sometimes after that. But, you know, that deliberate approach works a lot of times with guys like Cruz and you know, that fall into your lap and some other players and Pedro Alvarez. And then other times you need to strike quickly if you really had serious interest in someone like Reddick because he's gone now.
See, personally, I think as we sit here, the most important position is the catcher. Because, again, Wieters didn't have the qualifying offer. He could come back maybe on a two-year deal. They didn't want to risk him accepting the 17.2. But likely he'll end up somewhere else on a 3 or 4 or 5 year deal, depending on what he can get. Jason Castro, to me, is really intriguing because he's a left-handed bat in this ballpark. He is an outstanding defensive catcher. And you already have Caleb on this team. It could be a straight platoon. If it's a left-handed starter, Caleb plays. If it's a right-handed starter, Jason Castro plays. And what you have is two really good game managers behind the plate.
Yeah, and I guess, again, a lot's going to depend on what he's looking for, because how many years and dollars do you want to invest in him if you truly believe that Chancisco is right around the corner being ready to be a player in the majors, whether it's a backup, full-time, platoon, whatever type situation? How much do you want to commit to Castro if somebody else steps up with two guaranteed or even three, whatever? But I know the Orioles like him, and, you know, he's really good defensively, really good at framing pitches, which is a thing now. And I remember asking Dave Johnson a while back, did you ever hear about, you know, catchers who were good at framing pitches when you were pitching? Because nobody ever talked about that. Now it's a thing. Can you frame pitches? And apparently he's better at it than Wieters. He was an all-star 2013, but he had a 350 on base percentage, but then he's really declined offensively. But they're going to look defense first. I know they like him. My question about Wieters, how he's affected now, with what's his market? Because Houston's out now. And the Braves are probably turning their attention now to Castro. They really like him, and somebody did mention that, that they may be focusing more on him. If you took the Braves off the board then, what is Matt Wieters' market at this point? It is starting to shrink.
Twins need a catcher.
Yes. So, but you wonder how much would they be willing to spend.
They're not going
to
spend, though, right?
And the Nats maybe would get in. But, I mean, at some point you start to wonder,
that's
well,
right.
If the market's really
Nationals
shrinking.
Nationals do need a catcher.
Yeah. Could he kind of come back to the Orioles on a shorter deal?
All right. Here's something to just think about. And we have to keep in mind, Chance Sisko will turn 22 in February. So he'll play all next season at 22. And based on what Dan said, I'm expecting Chance Sisko to be in that exhibition game against the Orioles catching for Norfolk when they play that game in late March, and at least spend a good portion of the year working on his defense in AAA. If you go out and you get a catcher, what do you do? Do you do a one-year deal and hope you get the guy you want? Is it a two-year deal? Because if Sisko keeps progressing, as we've been told, the people that watch him play every day have seen him progress, in 2018, because he can hit, he could be your opening day catcher. So how much do you expend on a player bringing him in now, knowing the following year you're probably not going to need him? Like, for instance, Wilson Ramos is coming off the knee surgery,
right,
but he's a tremendous player and can hit. Do you go to him and say, well, how about a one-year deal, and we'll see where you go and you can rebuild your market? I don't know what the answer is, but if Sisko is here 2018 or maybe sometime next year, how much do you go out and give a catcher now?
Right. I'm wondering if Sisko could, even by the All-Star break, let's
exactly.
say he's just tearing it up in AAA, which, by the way, would be really impressive to a 22-year-old kid. We have to take that into account. He's always been playing really young for whatever level he's been at.
Every league he's been in.
Single A, Bowie, he was the youngest player, I think, in the Eastern League.
Won the batting title at Del Mar.
Right, exactly.
First full season.
22 if he's catching every day in AAA, but he could be ready sooner than that. So, yeah, I think ideally when Dan says he'd like to get a veteran catcher, he's looking at, in the perfect world, a one-year type guy, if Castro would take a year. And I think he's going to get more than that. Or a Nick Hundley, if you can bring him back. Now, of course, he got 2 years from the Rockies that he left the Orioles, and they wanted him back, but they weren't able to work out that second year. So if they could get a guy on a one-year deal, for them. But I have a feeling it's probably going to have to be where it's like at least a year with an option. And some of these guys, you may have to go 2 years, and you can always try and move them after the first year, depending if Sisko's right. And if he's not, you've got him for 2 years. Caleb is going to have to obviously hit to stay because I assume he still has an option. You could send him down next year as far as I know. So, and I'm still giving him a free pass because of that gruesome injury.
Yeah.
He did have an RBI. The fact he still got behind the plate after that injury is amazing to me. So I obviously he's a better hitter than that, plus defender, and that's what they're looking for. So I think Buck would be totally comfortable to have Caleb Joseph as his everyday catcher and then have somebody else backing him up.
Yeah, and if that is the scenario, if Caleb is the everyday player as he was a couple of years ago when Matt was hurt, a left-handed bat would be preferable.
Right.
Payne is a right-handed hitter, so is Audrey Perez. So if you look at just as Dan said, yeah, they have depth, but they're all kind of the same guy. So although Caleb obviously is on top of that group because he's been here the last couple of years, and a couple of years ago he was very instrumental in the playoff run. So
right.
He's a guy, at least you know, what does Buck say? He has the baseball card to look at and say, yeah, he's done that.
Right.
But that's what I think. I think they need a left-handed bat as they wait for Chance Sisko, who, by the way, is a left-handed bat.
Right, and they would I think we'd like to have left-handed bat wherever because you figure if you do subtract Wieters, switch hitter, obviously bats from the left side as well, and Pedro Alvarez, you're losing that left-handed bat. So they're definitely, I think, in their perfect world, they would get it, their right fielder would be a left-handed bat that could also be a leadoff hitter. Dexter Fowler, is he a left-handed hitter?
He's a switch.
There you go.
He can play
every
day. I'm
going to keep bringing his name up because that bridge was not burned. And I want to be right reporting that Dexter Fowler is signing with the Orioles. I want to be right just once when I report that.
If he didn't send Adam Jones a text saying, I'll see you in Sarasota tomorrow, nothing would have happened.
There you go. If I didn't have multiple people confirming it, I never would have written it. But anyway, I'm over it now. That bridge is burned as well.
All right. Last year, there were several teams that contacted the Orioles for Michael Givens and Brad Brock, knowing that the Orioles have Zach Britton, and neither of those guys, as long as Zach is around, is going to be the Orioles' closer, maybe on the occasional game if Zach's unavailable. What is your feeling on the Orioles with the strength there, where they may go out if a team is looking to make one of those guys a closer? They think they have the ability, and again, Brad Brock was brilliant this year. He had a little bit of a bump in August, but he recovered nicely in September. If you have strength and you have commodities the other team wants, doesn't that enhance the value that you get back if you're willing to entertain that? And do you think he would do that, even though we know on this team the bullpen is critical the way Buck uses it?
Right. I mean, I certainly think you're going to listen. And if somebody blows you away with an offer and they would have to do that, you know, you're going to certainly consider it. But on the other hand, I also look at, you know, if you have any questions at all about your rotation, all we can really say about it right now is that it's promising because of the progress that Gausman and Bundy made, and it's deep because the math says six starters for five spots right now. But other than that, if you have any questions at all about it, then don't you want to do what a lot of teams are doing, what we saw in the postseason? You really strengthen that bullpen more and shorten those starts and just say, look, especially the back end of the bullpen, if I can get five and two-thirds out of certain guys and then I can turn it over to a deep bullpen – and that's your strength, maybe that's how you advance, win a division, advance deep in the playoffs, by leaning heavily on that bullpen. So you may want to add to that as opposed to subtract. I know they probably like another veteran lefty, maybe more specialist type, even though Donnie Hart did so well. That was over 22 appearances. You know, the jury still may be out, but I think lefties were 5-for-38 against them. And Dan thinks that he wouldn't have to necessarily just be a specialist, even though he's better against lefties. You might want to bring in another veteran lefty and have to figure out what they're going to do in long relief if they non-tender Vance Worley, which is possible, if they non-tender T.J. McFarland, which is possible, whether you dropped one of the starters who doesn't make the rotation into that long relief role, even a Mike Wright, Tyler Wilson, do you go out and try and find somebody else? But I could see them wanting to add to that bullpen, strengthen it more, and take a little more of the pressure off a rotation that still has some big question marks.
Yeah, I think Tyler actually is perfect for that, mm-hmm. for that long relief role, because he's a guy that can bounce back. He generally attacks the strike zone. And if you got a guy who doesn't know when he's going to pitch, but when he comes in, he knows he has to bridge right. the gap. He's pretty good at that.
Right. That's why Vance Worley was so yep. valuable to this team. I said he could have been the unsung hero. I know a lot of people kind of overlooked him. What he did was extremely difficult. He would tell you that. When you show up at the ballpark not knowing if you're going to pitch and going long stretches without it and all of a sudden being, hey, we need you to eat up innings, or maybe we need you to come in the later innings and get three outs for us, maybe spot starter. He had, you know, he was used in a kind of irregularly and still was effective enough. If you look at his overall numbers, and it's not easy to find that guy. And he's the first to admit, like, where he's working down his salary – arbitration eligible, that they may think, you know, we don't want to spend that much money on somebody who has that role. We can find somebody cheaper. But it's really not easy. And he handled it very, very well, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. And he would love to come back. I just don't know if the money is going to be right because so many other guys are going to be getting these big raises.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that is what happens to Ryan Flaherty. Mm-hmm. Because Ryan is a very valuable player to this team. But he's going to make probably over $2 million next year if he comes back with being arbitration eligible. And in September, he had a hard time getting into the games because the Orioles were in a pennant race and Buck kept running the regulars out there. And I understand why, because he needed to win to get to the postseason. But is that a position where you maybe go out and get somebody else to play that role because you're not going to pay a utility guy who maybe will play once a week $2 million.
Right. That's why he's another non-tender candidate. He's always been a favorite of Buck's, as you know. And
he's great for the team. It's just the economics.
Right. And people obsess so much on the offense. But this guy plays all three outfield spots, could play anywhere in the infield, could be your emergency catcher, and he can pitch, as we saw.
Yeah.
It's hard to find that guy as well. You know, Buck says, you let this guy go, you're going to spend all winter trying to find that guy. But you're right. Again, economics, they may be to the point where they're like, you know, we're going to have to find somebody else less expensive, but then you're going to have to find a guy who is that versatile, and you probably won't be able to find someone who plays as many positions as well as he does. It's not just that he can grab a glove and go out there and do it. He's a plus defender at multiple positions, so it's not easy to replace that guy, but it may be a little bit too much to spend now on him.
Well, they love Ozzie Martinez, mm-hmm. and he's a shortstop at AA, and we see him a lot in spring training because Buck loves him. That kid can pick it, and if that – I don't know if he could play second. I don't know if he could play third, but if you're a shortstop, you probably could adjust to those other spots, and he would be up on the league minimum to play once a week and be there just in case, because I'm sure next year J.J. is going to get a few more days off even though he's coming out of the game, because you got to keep that guy fresh. He's too important to the team.
And other players, the younger guys, don't want to come out if J.J. does it, which is funny. Buck said, you know, Hardy's playing every day, and these guys, a guy like Scope or Machado or whomever is like, you know, I'm much younger than him. I'm not going to admit that I'm tired and need a day off. So maybe it would help J.J. if he said, all right, look, I'm going to sit. Maybe the other guys would say, okay, well, it's okay if J.J.'s doing it. But, you know, it's a luxury if you could find a utility guy, because Paul Janish is a minor league mm-hmm. free agent. He's outstanding defensively. He could play third, sure. He could play second for you. But it's a luxury if you can find a utility infielder who also can handle the outfield positions for
right.
you. I mean, again, that's what made Flaherty special. So you may have to go ahead and just settle for finding a guy that can cover you wherever in the infield, and you just carry those extra outfielders.
I wonder if Caleb's brother, Corbin, who had a huge year at AAA, he could flat out hit.
Right.
The kid just rakes. I don't know. He was a second baseman there. I don't know if he could play shortstop in an emergency, but the reason he intrigues me is the fact that the once a week he's in there, you know he's going to give you four good at-bats.
Right. And I'm sure he can move around, and that's, you know, it would be a great story, too, if he could make it. You know, Steve Pierce is a free agent. They'd love to re-sign him, a guy that plays multiple positions. I don't think you want him at shortstop necessarily,
no.
but you could always, you know, move Manny over, and you can find your third baseman to replace him. But that's a guy that, you know, Pierce will play anywhere. If he'll just say, give me a glove, I'll try it. But he's had a lot of trouble staying healthy, and there's talk that he's, again, going to get a two-year deal probably in free agency. I know Buck would love to have him back. It depends what you want to commit to him because it's been unfortunate. You know, he just every year there's a stop on the DL. And is he going to be okay? I assume he'll be healthy enough after the surgery that he'll be able to play the outfield again. But the arm kept barking every time he would try and make throws from the outfield after they acquired him. They gave up a good young catching prospect to get him.
Yeah, Jonah Heim.
Plus
yeah.
defensive catcher. So you kind of like to get more for that deal than what you got. So that would motivate me to try and bring Steve Pierce back just to justify making that trade.
All right, I could tell you're fatigued doing one show, so how about you take next week off?
There you go.
Yeah, well, it is Thanksgiving, so we have to be with our families on Thanksgiving. So we're going to be back 2 weeks from today, which is December 1st. And the skipper is going to be here, Buck Showalter, here at Dempsey's Brew Pub right here in the middle seat. And that's going to be a lot of fun because Buck likes to tell stories, and he's not afraid to give his opinion.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe he'll give us a few nuggets here.
Well, he might.
That would be nice.
So it's good to see you again, and
good to see you.
You got a lot of things to write about. Now you don't have an off season, right?
I do not have an off season.
You and Molesky, or does he have sort of one?
He writes every day like I write every day. But I'm going to be on the road a little bit tomorrow to visit the family. So I told him, look, be alert and keep checking Twitter for me, and he'll do that.
Well, the good news is we're at a wedding, so at least I got a little bit more time.
You set the record for weddings in 1 year.
All right, we got a break. Maryland basketball is coming up now. They're against St. Mary's College. We'll be back here in 2 weeks for Rock'em Gym on Hot Stove Baseball.